I think for me, Robert, honestly, I've always been somebody where risk isn't scary to me. Sure, is it scary if I put down a Wharton grad like as a T account, like for assets and liabilities? When you're starting something, man, the liabilities are long and the assets are short, right? But I've always been somebody who has, I know my North Star inside.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. On this episode of How Success Happens, I talk to Amy Eric. She's the founder of Madison Reed, and we're talking about the importance of passion and resilience in entrepreneurship. Amy Eric, the visionary behind Madison Reed, shares her journey of building a successful omni-channel beauty brand, specializing in the hair color space. Despite reaching the top of the venture capitalist industry, Amy felt a burning desire to create her own venture, recognizing a gap in the hair color market riddled with harmful ingredients. She seized the opportunity to offer safe, high-quality alternatives for everybody to enjoy. So join us as Amy discusses the resilience and passion it takes to become a successful entrepreneur. I started off the interview by asking Amy about her childhood, going back. Were there people that influenced her? Were there influencers in the community? And here is what she said.
Thanks, Robert. I'm thrilled to be here. Very excited about it. Yes, I'm the product of a divorced household, single mom, raising a couple of kids, trying to make ends meet. So first anchor would be like a woman early in my life that worked full-time, two jobs. Was education was what we were instilled and doing well at school. And I was also the byproduct of, they had four sisters, strong relationship. And my aunt, who was a mentor to me, who just passed away at 107.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Just, God bless her.
Yeah. Was just amazing. Was an entrepreneur. So do that math of 107 years ago and somebody who like had her own accounting firm and like just incredible, traveled around the world by herself. And so I saw super early and it was instilled in me that girls, women could do anything. It never dawned on me that you couldn't. So I got very lucky in that sense. And then I was a camp kid. I don't know if you were. I was a kid that
I was
to summer camp. and that was very influential in my life because I saw a lot of the women running the camp that were successful. They had businesses, they cared about their kids, they raised them in different ways. It was always very clear to me that was a path that was available if I chose it. And I think that was very influential in my life to never create the barrier that anything wasn't possible.
I love that. We can stop the podcast right now. No, in any case, I want to talk about that and obviously understanding where you come from with that background and the pursuit of education. You end up going to UConn and UPenn. And while you were there, did you have this idea of what you wanted to do or what you were really going to tackle after school?
Yeah. So I went to UConn undergrad and I'm the product even in high school. I'm the product of public schools. And so when I talk all the time, it's interesting because the Madison Reed, known in the company as TMR, was the product of private institutions and now in private college. I'm a public school kid. And I take a lot of pride in the fact that public school kids can achieve things. And so it never dawned on me that I didn't have a certain kind of pedigree. What dawned on me was that I needed to find my genius, find my zone. And so coming out of UConn, I got the early break to become a banker and then work my way up into becoming an investment banker at a bank that used to be called Bankers Trust for those of us of a certain age group, which was pretty prestigious at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And then what became really clear, and this is the interesting part, and it has something to do with Wharton as well, was that I was very entrepreneurial and I was in a much more structured big company environment. So it's the signals early on of the what I call the disconnect between my instincts, my genius, where that stuff effortlessly flows through you, and what was happening in corporate environments, where that's fascinating. And so then I went back to Wharton. And that was, in those days as well, much more geared towards the only two things you do when you get out of Wharton is you become an investment banker or you go to structured consulting at Bain & McKinsey. Right. And I was like, no, I want to start a company. Well, I'm a weirdo here. I did go back to the same bank. As I say in life, sometimes once isn't enough and you got to bang your head against the wall a second time. And then a couple of years later, I left and started my first company. And that was like a big thing because that was entrepreneurial. And I think people had a really small 401k. Like, I didn't even know what that was. And I was just like, okay, I got to pay a penalty. Great. Let me take the money. And then convinced a friend of mine's dad, who I was close to put $100,000 in. And then I paid him back in 4 months and he was pissed. He was like, wait, this seems to be working for some interest. What? Yes. Don't rush it. And then never took venture money. And my first startup was very much like scrappy, not funded, profitable pretty quickly. And then I got lucky and six and a half years into that, sold that to a public company. And then had the good fortune at that time was like when the internet was starting. Like all of us remember this, I don't know, remember Al Gore and the internet?
Or he invented the internet.
Yeah, exactly, Robert. I went to what was a fledgling little thing called E-Trade. And had a front row seat. I was very grateful from even the ups and the downs to see this thing where I think you all remember the big billboard signs, fire your broker.
Yep. You guys were out there in terms of, if you look back in those years, probably around 99, 2000, 2001,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I was there right then.
Right. Super Bowl commercials. Exactly. And
right, the monkey clapping.
And
But you know,
I want to ask you, because your history and background, it's fascinating. And I'm still blown away by you telling me about your aunt, 107, who just passed away, who was an entrepreneur herself. And when you think about the math and the years that was, there were very few women. But also, what was the feeling like? You come out of Wharton and like you said, there's everyone I know at that time. It's like banking, consulting, right? And it was before entrepreneurship. And when you started your first business, because I relate to this, when I told people I was starting a company and they would give me a look like, why wouldn't you go work for the safe bet? The funny thing was, I was at Lehman Brothers for 6 months when I realized I can't be in corporate America. And everyone's like, stay there. It's the safe bet. But I want to ask you, how difficult was that for you to, at that time, because a lot of our listeners don't even realize entrepreneurship wasn't looked upon as like this. It was prior to tech, and it wasn't looked upon as this incredible, what most people want to do now. And being a woman, how difficult was that for you at that time?
So I'm going to answer it in two ways. I'm going to answer it from what I've come to know at my place in life is what I would call the conscious versus the unconscious. We all live in a life where we behave in certain ways, and then we reflect either at the moment, if we're conscious enough in our life, or later on to think, what was going on there? I think for me, Robert, honestly, I've always been somebody where risk isn't scary to me. Sure, is it scary if I put down a Wharton grad, like has a T account, like for assets and liabilities. When you're starting something, man, the liabilities are long and the assets are short, right? But I've always been somebody who has, I know my North Star inside. And some people, that's not important to them. Other things are important, maybe safety and security, risk mitigation, having more money in the bank. And I've come to learn that whatever that is for you, that's what you should be doing. There's no judgment, right? Because I'm more of a risk taker doesn't mean I look at people that may not be and live very content, fulfilled lives. And that's awesome, right? So I've come to understand that we're all different. We're all built in different ways. I'm built to be a risk taker, follow my genius. I'm not happy when I feel constrained, right? I'm not happy when I feel like I'm not creating something. And this is the same thing. And I don't mean this with any ill will at all. I loved being a venture capitalist. We can talk about that. It was exciting in the most noble sense. You get to be the person that helps entrepreneurs achieve their goals. It is a noble profession. It gets a bad rap. I don't believe in the bad rap. There are always actors in one realm or another. But the truth is, it's a very noble profession if done right. Having said that, I always watched the person sitting there running something, wishing I was them versus the person that had funded them, right? I am somebody that I don't, when there's discourse in my life, like static about what I'm doing and my North Star, it's not tenable for me. It's an unhappy place. So what was it like? Scary. People were like, what are you doing? You're a crazy person. Same thing. You leave being a VC where sky's the limit. You have reached the pinnacle of your career in Silicon Valley, a venture capitalist. And I was like, I don't care. I'm not happy. And at a stage in my life where it didn't make sense to go back in and do this crazy hair color, who gives a, it's not obvious. And so, yeah, I talk about the text list I have in my life. It's a topic of all the people that turned me down, all the people that doubted, all the people that told me you're a crazy person, all the people that still turned me down, and this company is soaring. Trust me, there will be the text when we ring the bell at the New York Stock
Exchange. I love that because you are speaking to the choir. I never did go the VC route. I've just been building businesses. I'm an operator, and that's the only thing that makes me happy.
Exactly.
And I do want to ask you though, and I love that you keep a record. That's awesome.
It's actually going to be a very loving, because I'm a loving. Some people would call me a nice killer.
Right.
Is that I'm going to be really nice, and I'm going to send them all a bottle of Dom on me.
I love that. I love that. And I just love the fact that it's also motivating, because so many of us as entrepreneurs, so many people listening to this podcast, there is so much rejection, right?
Exactly.
And you probably, from the side of being a VC before the Madison Reed, you probably had to reject a lot of businesses.
Absolutely.
And put in money. And tell me, what was you're at E-Trade, you get involved in the VC world where, like you said, it's every big entrepreneur that sells their business for whatever, millions of dollars, they become VCs, right? It's easy.
Yeah.
So what was it that finally, what was it that finally, did it come first that you just knew you wanted to be operating a business, or did this big idea come for Madison Reed?
The big hair color idea?
Yes.
As I call it, like world peace, the hair color idea. They're equal with each other. Robert, see where I'm going?
Having two teenage daughters.
Okay, I get it.
The hair color, it's a very important topic in our house.
Yeah, you're singing my song.
Yeah.
I would say that the first step was, do I want to continue being a VC? That's what kept coming up for me. And I want to say this. I loved what I was doing. And I had the good fortune of being at Mavron with Howard Schultz and Dan Levitan. These are wonderful people doing consumer-based venture. I'm a consumer person. How do I say this? I have deep gratitude. I think everything that happens in life is for a reason if you pay attention. And it gives you what I call the little breadcrumbs that lead, if you follow them, to the next thing. If your eyes are wide open and you realize that whether it's the rejection or the sadness or the heartbreak in life, the other side is the joy, right? It always is. You just have to, it's not human to say, oh, let me feel bad about this for a while and just sit in that.
Yes.
So I was feeling a discourse inside myself for a while. I told you, I'd fund these companies and be like, oh my God, I want to be that person. It was everybody else ran out, other real venture guys primarily got into their Teslas. I'm trying to be a blockbuster here, and ran out of the room of the board meeting thinking, I'm going to my next board meeting. And I'd be like sitting with the CEO, having empathy and trying to get into things. I'm like, okay, so what's the disconnect here? And then at the same time, and this is the funny part of the story, again, breadcrumbs in life, I saw Dollar Shave Club and passed on. And you want to hear irony in life, Mike Dubin, who's the founder of Dollar Shave, is now on my board.
I love that. I love that.
And the ex-CFO of Dollar Shave is my CFO. Okay. So the reason that this is an important part of the story is, number one, I think if you do venture right, the people you turn down, I got more deal flow from the people I said no to, because I never just said no. Mm. I said, doesn't work. Here's the reasons I want to tell you. And I want to introduce you to three other people. It was never, honestly, this is a bad idea. It was like, here's why we wouldn't be good partners for you. And so let me give you people that might, right? So that's a pay it forward attitude. So I saw Dollar Shave, we passed on it. There was some static about should we not? It doesn't matter. What matters is I got intrigued with this idea at the same time, like all these categories, shaving, deodorant, like just go down the list. Did they have to be on the shelf of Walgreens or Duane Reade? Or could we create a situation where we could take out the middleman, known as direct to consumer? That was the genesis of D2C. And I ran numbers to look at what would be the women's analog to shaving. Because the other part that I knew, Robert, was it sounds like we have some similarities. I don't want to spend time on things, not just in being an entrepreneur, but subject matters I don't have mission and passion for. Mission and passion person. Because if I'm going to put in what it takes to get one of these things to be successful, I actually really want to care. I actually really want
to. Short.
Exactly. I want to be passionate and wake up every morning thinking, I'm getting this thing. I'm going for the goal line. And I want to take a bunch of amazing people with me. I looked at it and I wanted it to be in the women's space. And the size of the prize of hair color is insane. It's a crazy thing. $16 billion. 85% of every woman over the age of 18 in the US alone colors their hair every 6 weeks. When I first pitched the business, most guys, still to this day, go, was it a big enough total addressable market? And I'm like, are you?
They have no idea.
Have you checked your Visa bill, dude? And so.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. So the truth was there were two parallel things going on, but the motivation was I got one more left in me. Maybe I got more. You never know.
I do. I think you do.
No, this one is far from over.
Yeah, this one, you're on a good ride.
Yeah, but I also cared about the subject matter for really two reasons. One, ingredients in traditional hair color are just crazy bad. And so could I make something that was better for people? Check. And then the second thing was when I realized that cosmetologists were central to the key of our business model, because our call center is all certified licensed cosmetologists and the people that work in our 90 stores are all licensed cosmetologists. I started looking at their income levels and I started looking at their debt profile from cosmetology school. And I started looking at the fact that most of them are single women, many of them women of color. And I have a social justice part of me. And I'm like, okay, we could figure out how to give them great lives. I'm in.
That's awesome. So tell me, how do you start and go about it? And were you doing it on your own?
So I did all the research initially. And I got, here's the thing. I feel like I had a lot of good fortune, right? So when people talk about like hard roads, yeah, it's been a hard road, but luck does, as I say in life, you position yourself to get lucky, but luck has a role. We could all look at somebody who had some massive outcome, right? No offense. And then you spend time with them and you're like,
how'd that happen?
You're a really nice person. I like you, but I don't, that's $1 billion. Like, I'm not really sure. And then you meet somebody else who's extraordinary and they've had businesses that didn't go anywhere. So there is timing, there is luck, there is, but it's a positioning of yourself to be at that place. So here I had been a VC and I had a lot of people I did deals with and I had a lot of relationships after 6.5 years. And I had a lot of honestly doing what I told you, which was paying it forward. So it was a moment where people were like, probably a relatively competent person who's got a good heart. And this is an intriguing idea. So right out of the get-go, we got funded. It was like 2 seconds. I had some people with me on the ride that have different skill sets. And then our first task, Robert, really was, could we make the product? We got funded before the product was really in a box. That we got very lucky. It was a certain place at a time in the market, 13 and 14, where it was go. And a lot of, we got the benefit of things forward from where what we deserve. That's the truth. And then what I would tell you about making it work is, I think one of the biggest things as being an entrepreneur is the understanding of left foot, right foot, left foot, right foot. It's not a sprint. It's, and especially in a business like this, because your daughters, you talk about this. The biggest thing for them is, oh yeah, I love hair color. But if I told you that it could screw up how you look, you'd be like, no. So friction points are what define product market fit in any business. This, you're a great entrepreneur, is you got to find your way through the windy, rocky road of that eureka moment where you're like, oh, yeah, there it is. In your podcasting businesses and the things you do, you start to see like something is effortless hitting. And then you're like, okay, that's it. But it takes a lot of trial and error. And so we started as a D2C business. We're a big omni-channel business now, probably one of the most omni-channel businesses that exists. We have 90 of our own stores where we color your hair with our product. That's revolutionary. We have a D2C business and an Amazon business where you pick your color with our assistance of AI, but then you do it at home. And those are two very different markets. And then we're on Walmart's shelf, be proud to be on Ulta's shelf in Ulta Target store. So we've taken an approach that opening the funnel at the top to be everywhere for the efficacy of the brand is how businesses, consumer businesses tip. I don't have a belief that you just keep it in one channel.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Entrepreneurs, how do you make success happen when your business takes you on the road? Sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you'll save at least 20% every time you rent a car. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members can earn credits redeemable towards free rental days. It's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credits during your first 90 days. Make corporate travel even more of a success. Join for free at hertz.com/business rewards. This applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/business rewards to learn more.
And we're back.
No, I love that. I want to get to where you are now because of everything that has gone from a perspective, obviously, not day to day, but seeing the Madison Reed and the explosive growth. And in fact, that's how having you on the podcast, I just kept seeing it and seeing it. And my walk home every day from my office, there's a Madison, there's one on the corner of, I think it's 71st and Columbus, maybe in New York City. 72nd Columbus,
yep,
right there, right by my apartment. So and then just kept hearing about it. But was there ever a time early on, because you had that business you had created originally, had sold it, you went to E-Trade, you're working in VC. Was there ever a time in those first couple years or first months where you thought to yourself, maybe I should stay in VC? I forgot how hard this is. I forgot what being an entrepreneur is about. Was there ever that period where, you know, you really just, for as much as a person and as you've said, you can't be in that world? Was there any of those difficulties or that you felt?
1,000% yes. Like this is like an a thing that I try to talk about all the time openly and in a very vulnerable way. Self-doubt, imposter syndrome.
I know them all.
Is true for pretty much anybody that's conscious, in my opinion. I've never met anybody that I thought was stable that doesn't have those things of doubting, concern, feeling bad, scared, anxiety, right? Like voices, stories in our head about what we can't do. I'm human. I have those stories. I still have those stories, Robert. And my life's journey is to understand those stories. There's a part of all of us that have that, like somewhere at 3 or 4 years old or whatever, if you want to get like really therapy here, something emblazed, and it could have been the littlest thing that was big then in your head about, oh, are you worthy? Can you do this? What? And I have this thought process. I've come to understand, I think most people are afraid to fail, but I think the truth is most people are just afraid to succeed.
Yeah.
Because you don't know, like, how do I deal with that? What would that be like? And am I worthy of that? So I've gone through a lot of journey in my life. I have an executive coach. Like, I am a constant life learner about life, about me and my space in the world and what is my responsibility. And so I am very aware of my foibles. I'm crazy. You got to be crazy to do that. But in my opinion, keep being crazy, because where crazy is where the space of innovation comes in life. And yes, doubt. Times where I'm married to a wonderful woman. Times where, and she's very different and calm and represents heart, where sometimes I go straight to head. And I'd come home and I'd be like, this is nuts, blah, blah, blah. And she's, are you done yet? Are you finished? And I'm like, yes, why? She said, okay, where's your zone? Are you happy? And the answer was always yes. So my number one characteristic of successful entrepreneurial endeavors, resilience. So it's like, knock me down. It's okay. It's good. I'm learning. What did I learn from that? When people turned us down, I would always say, honestly, I'm curious. Tell me why. I don't want to dispute you. I respect you. Give me your knowledge so I can help think about our business and improve it. It wasn't personal, right? But sure, at night when I closed the door, did I burst out in tears that it felt personal? Like, you're telling me my baby's ugly. Sorry, I'm human. God damn it, my baby's not ugly, right? But maybe my baby, perception-wise, didn't look as cute as I thought it did. And so what did I need to understand? My truth isn't all the truth. There's truth everywhere. We did windy roads. We went up and down. We got funded in 6 months. After that, the tubes were in a box and we had 1,000 women in a beta, and all the things we thought were true about how the business would run worked.
It's incredible. Tell me about, first, you shared so much great insight. I just want to say and put it out there, because I have probably done 300 plus episodes for Entrepreneur of How Success Happens with super successful entrepreneurs like yourself. And I know the head of Entrepreneur thought I was going to quit after 2 and be like, this is, forget this. But I love it because I love talking to people like you. But you hit it, because from what all those interviews, what I have learned is resiliency is absolutely the number one factor that will determine success. And just like you said before, it's really incredible, because you do see people who are resilient, different businesses, but it might be bad timing, or there's others that just hit it and timing's perfect and luck, and all of a sudden it's a $1 billion business. But as you said, I will tell you that you hit it right on the head, from at least my own perspective from talking to all these people, is if you could pick yourself off the mat and you're able to do that and continue to do that, then that is going to be the number one indicator of success. It sounds like you went after it. You start this business. It grows, it sounds like it's doing right off the bat. Was there a pivotal point where all of a sudden it became just a household name, which I look at it as today, where was that when you went omnichannel, or was that prior? When was it?
So it's such a great question. So like we had a pretty decent sized business before the pandemic, and we only had 12 stores, and I think 8 of them had opened 6 months prior. So we were a very novice four-wall business, and we were in Ulta only. And the pandemic was the weirdest feeling that I ever had in my life. I felt a lot of guilt about it. Here, our business, in the matter of a day, we were selling a box of hair color in our e-commerce business every 5 seconds for months. It was like the numbers, my head of growth acquisition was like texting me, and he's, Amy, there's like smoke coming out of our servers, for Christ's sake. You better make sure that we have enough like server space, racks. And it was because, here's the interesting part, right? All the doubt, all of the struggle, all of the knowing the friction point of, should I buy this, should I not? In one moment, it was like, every dollar that we spent on radio, podcasts, Facebook ads, TV, every woman in the US at least was sitting on a Zoom looking at her roots, not able to go to her stylist, having her book club, talking to her friends. And the words Madison Reed were like how to color my hair at home was the number three Google term in beauty. So all of a sudden it was like the universe went, here you go, kid. And so it flipped. And when I flipped, we had a bigger problem, which was that thing that you should be so lucky to have as my Jewish, from your mouths to God's ears, Amy, God's ears were listening. And I had to keep hair color coming in from Italy in the Lombardy region, that's where our factory is, which is the region hit second to Wuhan.
They were hit really hard.
And we got to get the Italian government to agree to get the factory open by making free hand sanitizer for them. Talk about, give me something. So just pivoting. And then at the same time, having George Floyd incident happen. If anybody starts to understand, like middle of March, in June, this absolutely what I would call the, if not for people to remember, one of the most buckets of cold water moment in my life. Of watching what the heck was happening and realizing that I had a workforce where this event was not pedestrian. And it shouldn't have been pedestrian for anybody, regardless of skin color. It was a human moment of horror. And I had an awakening, not just the awakening of a business that flipped, but an awakening of, okay, like this is bigger than it appears to be. And this company has a moment to have empathy and a moment to change our own relationship to understanding the plight of humanity, diversity. What does it really mean? Yeah, those were the moments. And at the same time, I got people, our office closes. I got people starting to hire remotely, trying to keep culture alive, people with little kids, my own kid, TMR, the Madison Reed, all of a sudden in 11th grade, can't go to school anymore. And spent the second half of 11th grade and almost all of 12th grade in her room, isolated. And I have workforce all over the place going crazy, working 24/7, and people with little tiny kids who can't, the kids are running around the house, can't go to school, people getting sick, people's parents dying. Like we had it all within a 6 month period. So that was a flip moment. Business goes crazy, but the world feels like, never anticipated not being able to leave my house. Did you? And New York City, like crazy, right?
Crazy. It was crazy. When I think crazy. Back from that time period and think, obviously, I was starting a business and just running a business and how the stories you're telling, especially the fact your product was coming from Italy, but just thinking back, living in New York City, first off, totally. It seemed 90% of the people just were not here. And I'd walk outside, I'd walk my dog at night on Broadway, and it would be like pitch black and no one out. And it was just it was so strange. And then you try and work and no one knew what was going on. And then obviously, of course, the George Floyd, when that happened and all of these things, and you look back now and what a crazy time. And at that time, you're running this business, like you're, and it sounds like a lot of your employees are really affected.
Totally.
Is that when it became more of a mission for you?
That is a very insightful question. I'm not sure I'm going to spend a minute to sit with that. I think there was always a mission, but I think that was a moment where I understood the anchor to the mission. That this for me was really about the people and the social experiment, as I call it. We employ over 1,000 people, many of them single women, many of them 60 some percent people of color, 83% women or 85% women in our whole workforce. And I started to realize that our mission and mantra was not just words, it was how we had to behave every day. And for a reason, yes, our guests, number one, but if your team members are not happy, your guests are not happy. Let me tell you something, like that's the way business works. And I think it's, to me, it's simple, but for many people, it's no, don't care about your team members. Just put on a facade. As I say, call a credit card company. Let's see how that's going in customer service. They're not happy and they're not interested in making you happy. And so the interesting part for me was like, in this, again, going back to it, going through heartbreak, your kids, you shared a little bit about your daughters with me. Thank you for that, by the way. They haven't gone to college yet. So I have one kid, as I call it, my wife and I are chickens. Like, we did it once. We're like, this is great. No more. We can't handle this. We're not strong enough. And when your kid goes to college, as my coach said to me, Amy, you can avoid it. You can move. You can tell me a joke. You can do all this stuff. You got to let your heart break. And so all of a sudden I was running a big business and my heart was breaking.
Mm.
And I was trying to rectify leadership and vulnerability with heartbreak and fear. And I had to find something in myself, which was the North Star. And the North Star is like, okay, I'm just getting started, man. I'm just digging in, because we got this horrible thing that happened in life. Horrible. We don't even know the half of what's the ramifications for our kids and their anxiety and our own anxiety.
Not
like
good.
You and I are processing this. Oh yeah, remember when I walked down Broadway and you could hear a pin drop? Like that is not normal. San Francisco looked like a ghost
thing. Yeah.
It was crazy eerie. So we just said, oh, it's over.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah. So having said that, there was a lot of good fortune and there was a lot of sorrow and welcome to life. And so there you go. Our business flipped. We doubled our business in 6 months. And it was like, I'd been doing this a long time. I'd never seen anything like it. And then all of a sudden you find yourself where you are, hiring people like crazy. Can you hold on to the customers? Having to reopen stores. This is, you have listeners from everywhere, but when you run stores, regions, you become very fascinated about how Texas behaves versus how New York City behaves. There was no COVID in certain places. And in certain places, I had guests that were like, I'm not coming in if you're not wearing masks. And I have to wear a mask. And then I had places where literally people, Robert, it's not funny, but it was funny. If you make me wear this mask, I'm not leaving the chair. I'm not wearing it. And you'd have to call the police because there was like an ordinance that said must have people. So
such my a crazy time.
Yeah. And so we learned a lot. We learned a lot about motivations. We learned a lot about what is our North Star. Like I had pressure from our team members in certain places. Amy, please don't make me wear a mask anymore.
Hmm.
And my response to that was, hey, listen, I get it if this doesn't work for you. Okay. I'm not making a political statement here. I am trying to make a health standard statement. And as soon as your state tells me it's okay and I can make it a choice, but I'm not going to pull a ripcord. I can't. I have a conscience. My job. And then the second thing that happened, Robert, honestly, is I started to really understand, as entrepreneurs that start running businesses at scale, we actually have a responsibility that's bigger than we think. And my responsibility every day is to make sure that I'm making the decisions for these people where the paychecks every week are incredibly important to their future, not just their future, but their kids' future. And I'm responsible for that. But I got to think through these things in a way that it's just bigger than what it appears like, oh, we give a bunch of people a bunch of jobs. No, the way that this country has to embrace it is it's pretty clear that there's other shit going on, excuse my language, that isn't about embracing that. So what's my responsibility? I got to do what I think is right for people because I'm teaching them an important thing. And I want the listeners to hear this. Like, I'm teaching people that if you come to work and work hard, you have a good life. We pay benefits. We give you 2x the salary that you've ever made anywhere else. You keep all of your tips, but you got to come to work and you got to work hard. And that is something that, like, I've tried to teach our kid. I try to teach people, which is there's no shortcuts. And so if you're willing to put the time in, this company's willing to reward you, and you're willing, you will have the things that you need to then decide if you're going to construct your life a certain way. And that's my responsibility. And I try to take that seriously every day.
I love that. You have such incredible insight on a variety of things and topics. And before I let you go, though, I do want to ask you, you had made a comment earlier about ringing the bell, whether it be NASDAQ or the New York Stock Exchange or wherever it might be. What is your goal? Looking at it, understanding you've done an incredible job of building this business, taking care of these people, making it more of a mission, right, especially when you talk about your diverse workforce and just everything that you've done there. But for Madison Reed, for now, and as you look at it over the next couple of years of business, what do you want to see? What is your goal?
So I'm going to answer it in two ways. All that stuff we talked about, like the resilience and the pushing and the this and the, I'm somebody where it's hard to even know when something's done. Somebody once said to me, I think it was not said to me, I listened to this. I'm a big sports fan. I think we share that. And I'm a big football fan, Philadelphia Eagles fan. Don't
Oh, Eagles. All right. I'm a Jets fan. So
okay, there we go. There we go.
It's not like I'm a Giants fan.
I got a thing on my thing.
Birds.
Okay. So fly. I was watching a football game once and John Madden, who was just
of course
great. He said, does anybody ever think about, is cottage cheese ever done? And so I'm going to use that metaphor for life, which is like, when is Madison Reed ever done? No. So when somebody asks me, like, what's the plan? I'm like, I think anybody that goes into one of these things saying by this date, this is going to happen and I'm going to ring the bell and here's what it is. Oh my God, you are setting your life up for disastrous, like, disappointment. Here's what I believe. This company deserves greatness. There's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, 10 years this summer, and there's more to come. If it makes sense and when it's right, and if the financial returns make sense for every shareholder, including the common stock shareholders, which is all of us that are working here, makes sense to have some liquidity event that is commensurate with the deserving nature of what got put in, including the investors, early investors, recent investors. Like, I get up every day and I serve three people, Robert. I serve customers. Yeah. I serve team members. Yeah. And I serve a group of investors who've had a crazy belief system that this nuts lady could turn something that nobody wants to care about, but is huge, except every woman in the world, into something that women can be empowered and believe in. Like, that they have believed in my team and the mission. So I am going to do everything in my power to deliver whatever that looks like over the goal line. Will it be a seminal moment for this working class kid from public schools? Out, gay. It's like a crazy story, right? To stand up there with my team and my investors and ring a bell wearing purple. You bet it will.
I love it.
And I'm going to do it, Robert, with the thought process of every woman who's ever doubted themselves, every person working in a hair color bar doesn't know how they're going to pay their bills. That's what I'm doing it for. I want to do it for your kids, your daughters, to know that it actually is possible. It's not easy, but it's possible. So we'll see.
Amy, it's been a pleasure. I could probably talk to you for another 2 or 3 hours, but
it's
the average podcast is supposed to be like a half hour. We're already way over. But in any case, it was so great talking to you. I wish you continued success. Just really, I had a great time and just related on so many things that you talked about. And I am sure I will see you one day up there in your purple and whatever and ringing some bell somewhere. But what I love is the fact why you're doing it. And again, that's awesome. So thanks again for coming on and sharing with us your story.
Thank you, Robert. I just want to say this. Thank you. Thank you for what you do in having these stories be told to people. It's special.
Nice. We'll do an article too.
That was wonderful. I appreciate it.
You got it.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.